especially Americans. I'm sorry. She saw the hope dying in his eyes. He looked like a lost little boy. She took pity on him. But tomorrow night, I can pick you up and take you to my place for a home-cooked meal. I bet you haven't had one of those in a long time. Jack thought about saying, not since Mom made me dinner with Dad at the White House. But he wasn't a name-dropper, and he wanted to win the woman over on his own merits, not his folks. Sounds great. What time? I'll pick you up here at 5 after I finish at the center. Try to stay out of trouble until then, okay? Okay. See you tomorrow. Jack leaned over to kiss her goodbye. Their mouths lingered for a tender moment. He grabbed his suitcase and watched her pull away before heading up to his place. He couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. Chapter 52. Jack jogged up the stairs to his apartment, only to find a DHL delivery envelope lying against his door. It was addressed to him. He entered his apartment, kicked off his shoes, and fell into a chair at the small dinette table. He opened the envelope and read the cover letter from Detective Oblak, instructing him to sign the enclosed legal documents, acknowledging that the case of Elena Iliescu was officially closed and he was no longer considered a suspect. Nor did he have any legal standing in Slovenia against her since she was now deceased, etc., etc. Luckily, everything was written in English as well as in Slovenian. Jack didn't care about all of that, and he was happy to sign the documents and put it all behind him. His mind turned back to the fake cops. He wondered why they didn't bother to carry any identity papers, even fake ones. Real ones would have been even better. He chided himself for not grabbing their pictures, retinal scans, and fingerprints with the apps on his phone. But why would he? They were Serbian mafia, according to Aida, not foreign operators. The campus wasn't a crime-fighting outfit. Still, something was bugging him. Those three cops were pretty rough customers. They weren't run-of-the-mill gangster types. Maybe they had service training. If so, Gavin Beery could have found them that way. Gavin had saved his bacon back in Singapore by identifying a couple undercover Chinese special operators Jack had run into by accessing a DOD biometric database. Fingerprints, saliva, hair, and even semen samples of foreign operators were acquired one way or another and stored for future reference. If any of those phony Serb cops had ever spit or combed their hair anywhere near one of these DOD operations, Gavin would have been able to ID him. Didn't matter at this point. Those guys were in Bosnian police custody by now. The police would figure it out. His mind turned back to Aida. The smell of her soft skin. The taste of her mouth. She was an incredible woman. And clearly they were connecting deeply. More deeply than he'd thought possible. But he had to admit that she was a mystery. She wasn't a trained operator, but obviously she could handle herself in a pinch. She said she was only trying to protect him. He could believe that. He wanted to believe that. He was crazy about her. And she was crazy about him, too. He was sure. It had been a long day. A hell of a couple days. Time for some chow and a hot shower and an early evening to catch up on some long-needed rest. Tomorrow was going to be his last full day in Sarajevo, and then dinner with Aida. If tomorrow was going to be anything like today, he needed to be ready for it. Paris. Vasilev's glass-enclosed clean room, suite, really, occupied the entire fifth floor of the private hospital, located in a late 19th century Beaux-Arts building in the ultra-wealthy 16th arrondissement. From his bed, the old Bulgarian had a postcard view of the River Seine below, as gray and listless as freshly poured concrete oozing through the city. His medical suite looked like a set from the old sci-fi movie The Andromeda Strain. The room was hermetically sealed, and only select staff were permitted entrance onto the floor, and only when fully garbed in protective clothing and scrubbed spotless with the most powerful antibiotic cleansers. They adhered to BSL-3 protocols, just one step down from the biosafety level precautions the CDC would take when handling Ebola virus. Vasilev's experimental CAR T-cell treatment was proceeding well, according to the doctors, even better than they had hoped. But his overall health condition was extremely fragile, and his immune system severely weakened after years of traditional cancer therapies. Every precaution was being taken to protect the crime lord from infectious diseases of every sort, even the most benign bacteria, until his body had a chance to recover its own natural defenses. Vasilev was in a foul mood for a number of reasons, not the least of which was the strict macrobiotic anti-cancer diet his idiot doctor required of him. Who the hell can eat spelt and miso soup all day? But it was his blood pressure that was threatening to kill him at the moment. Behind the glass walls, Vasilev enjoyed every possible amenity, including an encrypted Amazon Echo show, which he was using now while lying in his adjustable hospital bed, speaking with his number two, the Czech. The entire floor was vacated, even of staff, for the video call. One determined glance from Vasilev's soul-snatching eyes sent even his world-renowned doctors scurrying for safety on the floors below. "My patience is running thin," Vasilev growled. "Why isn't Ryan dead?" "Our first attempt failed. We're not sure why. But the loose end is tied off." The Czech stubbed out a cigarette in an ashtray off-screen. Gray smoke lingered in the air. "And?" "We're tracking him now, in Bosnia." "Tracking him? You should be killing him." "You said you wanted his head. That makes matters more difficult to arrange." "Yes, Tomasz, his head. His head!" Vasilev pounded his mattress for emphasis. The solemn Czech nodded curtly. "Of course. It will be done."
"When?"
"Soon."
"How soon?"
"As soon as is humanly possible. However, I do have good news about someone else."
"Tell me."
"He did." Vasilev chuckled.
"Well done, old friend. Now finish the Orion job. Everything is being coordinated, even as we speak. How are you feeling these days?"
"I feel fantastic. Of course, for 17,000 euros a day, I should. I could walk out of here right now on my own two legs. Something I haven't been able to do in a year." The Czech allowed himself a small smile. "Then the treatments are even better than we hoped. Thank God."
"God? God has nothing to do with it."
The Czech's eyes betrayed nothing. He couldn't agree more. "I will report as soon as Ryan's head is in my possession. In the meantime, get better, old friend. We have much to do when you return."
The old Bulgarian nodded, shaking his jowls, which were pinking up nicely. "Worlds to conquer."
The Czech smiled again.
"Indeed. Worlds to conquer."
He lit another cigarette, inhaled deeply. Vasilev licked his yellowed teeth. He could practically taste the Czech's tobacco, one of many vices he sorely missed.
"And you, Tomasz, how is your health?"
"I feel fine."
"Good. If you want to keep it that way, get me Ryan's head before I leave this place, or I'll cut yours off myself."
Vasilev killed the transmission. His stomach gurgled like a fermenting beer cask. He called down for something to eat. Beans and brown rice, perhaps. Anything but that filthy miso soup. Alexandria, Virginia. Jerry Hendley sat at his desk at Hendley Associates, studying a piece of proposed legislation that the Senate Finance Committee was about to hold hearings on, when his phone buzzed.
"Yes, Alice."
"A call for you on line one. It's urgent."
"Thank you."
He picked up. A familiar voice. It was Jeremiah Morales, the head of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, a man who owed his position to the ex-senator. They exchanged a few pleasantries, but Jerry could tell there was something on the man's mind.
Out with it.
Jerry, I'm sorry to tell you that Weston Rhodes is dead.
Dead? How?
Hanged himself.
Jerry frowned with confusion.
That doesn't make any sense. Weston was only facing 5 years. He had a lot to live for.
Some guys just can't cut it.
Thanks for the heads up, Jeremiah. My best to Meredith.
Jerry shook his head in utter disbelief. Weston Rhodes, the former senator and CIA field officer, was not a hero by any means, but not a wimp either. And it wasn't as if he was doing time in the Hanoi Hilton like Admiral Stockdale. Rhodes had been located in the least restrictive wing of Club Fed, the federal correctional institution in Cumberland, Maryland. It was home to many white-collar criminals who posed no threat to themselves or others. Martha Stewart kind of crimes. Light duty, decent hours, no violence. It was a good gig, if you had to do time. Rhodes was busted for his role in the Singapore affair that nearly got Jack killed. He could have been tried for treason, conspiracy, and a number of other felonies that could have put him in for life, or even snatched it away from him. But one of Rhodes's K Street legal buddies bamboozled the federal prosecutor into a bench trial, and the presiding judge was a Yale alum who didn't see the need to recuse himself from the case, despite having known Rhodes for more than 30 years. It was rumored that Rhodes had stashed a good deal of cash in an offshore account as well. So why kill himself? It couldn't have been about his situation. Perhaps it had something to do with how he got there in the first place. He was connected to a middleman, the conduit between the North Koreans and the operation to steal the quantum computing technology and the attempt on Jack's life. What was that guy's name? He couldn't pull it up. He called Gavin.
Gavin, what was the name of that yahoo that was running Rhodes like a rented mule on the Singapore operation?
Zvezdev. A CIA SOG team found him, or at least parts of him, in a kimchi jar.
Jerry thanked him and called the Director of National Intelligence, Mary Pat Foley, a friend for many years. He had her personal number.
We found him in Croatia. A Bulgarian. The rumor was he was connected to some kind of criminal syndicate, but we never got more than that. I'll forward the particulars of what we have.
Thanks, Mary Pat. I might have to circle back to you on this.
You have my number.
Bingo, Jerry thought. Rhodes was connected to Zvezdev, some kind of syndicate mobster who wanted Jack killed, but he winds up dead instead. Zvezdev dead. Rhodes dead. And somebody connected to Zvezdev still wants to kill Jack. Zvezdev is the key.
That's it.
Jerry's email dinged. It was the Zvezdev file promised from Mary Pat. He opened it and scanned it for details. Zvezdev was the link to everything. The Bulgarian had fled to Croatia to hide, and it was the place where he had been killed. Jerry pulled out his encrypted cell phone and speed-dialed Dom. I'm forwarding a file to you guys right now. I need you to get over to Croatia, pronto.
Chapter 53.
Jack woke up with the alarm, refreshed and ready for a new day. He threw himself on the floor by his bed, banging out 200 push-ups in sets of 50 before he even allowed himself to take his morning piss. Nothing like a sense of urgency to motivate the will. It was time to get his head out of his ass. Time to get after it. Nothing wrong with a vacation, but it was no excuse for letting himself go, and the last 2 weeks had been too much of a slide. After he took a leak, he thought about changing into a pair of running shorts and going for a run along the river. But he never saw any runners in the city, and the sidewalks were crowded in the mornings, so he opted instead for 4 sets of 25 burpees. He nearly puked his guts out, but he finally finished, gasping for air. Feeling a nice little pump all over his body and a few aches he hadn't felt in a while, he padded barefoot into the kitchen to boil up enough water for his last bag of Jocko white tea and fry a couple eggs. After finishing up his breakfast, he turned on the English-language local news at the top of the early morning hour.
The two lead news items caught his attention. The first was about the upcoming Serbian Orthodox renewal service in just 2 days, and the growing excitement among Serbs in Bosnia and the region, with video clips of faithful Orthodox people boarding buses and smiling bearded priests packing suitcases. Local officials are anticipating 50,000 participants tomorrow, up from estimates of just 30,000 a week ago, one commentator noted. The second story featured the gruesome massacre of a Muslim wedding party 3 days before near Visegrad in Herzegovina, a region of the country through which he had passed with Aida on their trip to Dubrovnik. The images were horrible and all too familiar to Jack, both on television and, unfortunately, in person. In catechism, the nuns taught him the theological concept of original sin. But life with the campus proved to him it wasn't just a theory. The grim newscasters introduced English-subtitled video clips of grieving families and Bosniak community leaders calling for swift justice against the murderous Serb White Eagles. They complained that the corrupt and incompetent government was either unwilling or unable to deliver it. At least one Bosniak called for justice to be taken into our own hands, and a raging imam called for jihad against the Serbs from his pulpit. A news crawl along the bottom of the screen read, hashtag remember Srebrenica is trending number one on Twitter in Bosnia. Damn, Jack whispered to himself as he powered off the TV and headed for the shower. Jack left his apartment with the pre-stamped DHL envelope addressed to Detective Oblak and a list of touristy things he planned to do. Art galleries, museums, and churches. He wanted to get a better feel for the city and the culture. He'd really fallen in love with the country and the people he'd met, but a profound sadness dogged him. This nation had a long and painful history, and it seemed a dim future, barring some unforeseen development. Strong-willed, hopeful, entrepreneurial types like Aida seemed few and far between. There was no lack of human or natural resources in this beautiful country. It seemed like the only thing keeping it down was a culture of despair. Jack found the DHL drop-off, then started his tour, marking off each spot on his list as the morning progressed. After visiting the Sacred Heart Cathedral with the giant metallic statue of Pope John Paul II out front, his stomach grumbled and he found himself back at his favorite restaurant, downing another plate of fire-roasted cevapi and a bottle of sparkling water. After finishing his meal, he checked his list, but he already knew what was next. The Galleria 11795, with its permanent exhibit on the Srebrenica massacre, was the only stop he dreaded, thanks to Aida's warning. He seriously considered skipping it and going on to the Sarajevo Brewery Museum, but he knew he could catch that later. He checked his GPS on his phone with a sigh and headed for the dark soul of the Bosnian War. The Srebrenica exhibit didn't disappoint, if that was the right word. Located inside a modern, minimalist gallery of light blonde wood floors and gray walls, it didn't sit right with Jack. The rooms were uncluttered and antiseptic, but the subject matter was messy and dirty. It reminded him of his visit to Dachau years before, a single, perfectly preserved barracks building standing on well-groomed grounds without a speck of trash or disorder. No grimy black soot or flaky ash to mar the barracks. No blood-soaked rags dropped in piles around the compound. The German exhibitors had removed all evidence of trembling, urine-stained fear and the groaning despair that boiled up from the merciless ovens. The Galleria exhibit's most moving displays were the 52-foot-long Wall of Death, featuring the ages and names of the 8,372 men and boys killed by the Serbs, and the hundreds of haunting photos collected by the Association of Mothers of Srebrenica and Šepa. Jack exited the Galleria utterly depressed. His soul thirsted for life the way a drunk craves a drink. He needed to see Aida. Now, before he lost his faith in the possibility of hope. He turned the corner, heading for the exit, and saw a familiar pockmarked face. Too bad. A beefy man with bad acne scarring and a bandage across his broken nose blocked Jack's way out of the museum. "Vistia, isn't it?" Jack asked. The man smiled beneath his broken Ray-Bans, scotch-taped back together at the bridge. He was one of Kolok's goons, the one that jumped him just outside this building a few days ago. The one that Kolok warned would want to get his revenge.
"Kolok wants you," the man grunted. "You come with me. Now."
The man wasn't exactly making a request. Jack weighed his options. Jack took him once before and could probably take him again. But the man's shoulder holster bulging beneath his coat was persuasive.
"Okay, Chuckles, but you're driving."
Jack reached for his phone. A little too quickly, apparently. Vistia tensed, ready to throw a punch or pull his weapon. "Just need to call somebody."
"No calls."
Jack's options hadn't changed. He stopped reaching for his phone.
"Am I under arrest?"
"Kolok, now."
Jack shrugged.
"Time to see Kolok."
Chapter 54. Vistia ushered Jack into Kolok's cramped third-floor office at OSA OBA headquarters and departed wordlessly. The gray industrial carpet was lightly stained, and the wood-paneled walls were mostly bare, save for the service commendation awards and shooting trophies. At least this time it wasn't another basement interrogation room, but it wasn't much of an improvement. It looked like an abandoned set from the Rockford files.
"Thank you for coming, Jack," Kolok said, standing up behind his desk and extending his hand.
Jack took it firmly.
"Happy to be here."
"You are a gracious liar. Please, have a seat. Coffee? Water?"
"I'm fine, thanks."
Jack took a seat. "And for the record, I don't have to be here. But I chose to come."
"Duly noted and greatly appreciated.
Of course, if you hadn't come in voluntarily, Vistia was eager to encourage you."
"Yeah? How did that work out for him last time?"
Kolok laughed.
"I like you, Jack."
"I doubt that's why I'm here.
Just a few questions, if you don't mind."
"Sure. But a call would have worked just as well. I'm kind of busy at the moment."
"Of course you are."
The springs in Kolok's chair squeaked as he leaned back, folding his hands on his belly.
"It's just that I like to be able to read a man's face when I talk to him."
He tapped his cheekbone with his index finger.
"The eye is the best lie detector."
"Fire away. And don't blink."
Kolok chuckled.
"Funny."
He sat up with another orchestration of creaking springs and leaned on his desk. His round, roomy eyes narrowed.
"3 dead Russian nationals were found in an abandoned house last night. Each shot once in the forehead."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"My office was contacted. I reached out to a colleague at the Russian embassy. At first, he denied any knowledge about them. But an hour later, the deputy chief of mission called me and, how do you say it, tore me a new one."
"And this concerns me how?"
"By the deputy's reaction, it was clear to me that these Russians weren't simply unfortunate tourists. But I already knew that."
Kolok folded his hands on the desk, his eyes searching Jack's face.
"The strange thing is, they were wearing Bosnian police uniforms."
Jack felt the floor fall out from under his feet, but he kept his poker face.
"Could those have been the same jokers who stopped them on the road from Dubrovnik?"
"No comment, Jack."
"What do you want me to say?"
"Judging by their disguises, the deputy's reaction, and their summary executions, I'm quite certain these were Russian security operatives. SVR, FSB, perhaps even GRU. I'm leaning toward the latter. The deputy is a retired GRU intelligence officer. A nasty fellow."
"Makes sense to me."
Kolok nodded.
"So, you didn't know they were Russian?"
"How would I know anything about them? I never met them."
"But you did."
"I thought you said you weren't going to follow me around."
I did say that, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Kolak fidgeted with his knitted tie.
The last time we met, you said you were looking for Aida Kuric. I take it you found her.
You know good and well I did. I'm disappointed, Jack. I asked you to let me know when you found her. I guess it slipped my mind.
Or other things were on your mind.
Maybe. Jack had to assume Kolak's spies had them under surveillance the entire time. He suddenly felt creeped out and a little violated.
And what is your opinion about Ms. Aida Kuric?
My opinion is that she's the woman my mother wanted me to find, and I found her. Or technically, she came to me.
Interesting. Please go on.
She's beautiful. She's smart. She loves her country. She's a great tour guide.
A tour guide?
Yes, of course. I'm sure she is very good at it. She knows the country extremely well. Her tour company travels all over the Balkans.
Anything else?
Not that you need to know.
Fair enough. For now, let's get back to the Russians. You were traveling from Dubrovnik back to Sarajevo, yes?
Jack nodded.
And these three men pulled you over?
Yes. They wore Bosnian police uniforms, one civilian, two tactical. They diverted us off the main road and down to the river. Aida said they were really Serb mafia looking for a bribe.
What time was this?
I'd say between 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not exactly sure.
Why did they target your vehicle?
Jack shrugged. I'd rather not say.
Aida was smuggling medicine, right?
You need to ask her. And I don't like your implication.
It was medicine, wasn't it?
That's what the boxes said.
Did you look inside one?
Why should I? I had no reason to doubt her.
No, of course not. But perhaps it really was only medicine.
Kolak glanced at the ceiling, collecting his thoughts.
So they pulled you over, they demanded a bribe, you overwhelmed them somehow, and that's when you killed them.
Jack's eyes widened.
What?
Wait, no. That's not what happened.
Of course not.
Kolak sat back again, smiling at Jack's discomfort.
So tell me what did happen.
They pulled guns. I took two of them down. Fists and feet only, no weapons. Aida disarmed the other one.
Aida did? How?
She kicked him in the nuts and then cracked him on the nose. He was a little guy, down on the ground by the time I turned around.
Interesting skill set for a tour guide, wouldn't you say?
You should see my mother with an AR-15, and she's an eye surgeon.
What happened next?
We tied them up and called the police to turn them in. When we left, they were very much alive.
You tied them up, Jack?
No, Emir did, after we left.
Emir Jukic?
Yes, Aida's cousin. He's the guy who actually runs the tour service, not Aida. She only owns it.
He was traveling with you?
Apparently he'd been following us. I didn't know that at the time.
Interesting.
You keep saying that.
Everything you say is interesting to me, Jack. So tell me, who called the police, you or Aida?
Emir did. He told us to leave and he'd take care of the phone call.
Why not stay there with him and wait for the police to come?
Aida said we couldn't.
Why?
She said the police were corrupt and that they'd cause her big problems and that she was scared of them.
Of course she would say that.
Was she wrong? Kolak shrugged.
Not entirely.
What is that supposed to mean? Kolak sat up again.
In Bosnia, there are always three narratives for any given fact. A Croat narrative, a Serb narrative, and a Bosniak narrative. It's usually only those who aren't like you who can't be trusted.
Can you blame her?
Who was it that said, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are"?
Jack knew that it was Anais Nin, but he didn't want to play along. No idea.
It doesn't matter. To continue, Aida said that these men who stopped you were Serb Mafia.
She did. We checked for identification, but they didn't have any. And they weren't offering any, so that explanation made sense to me at the time.
Well,
we know now they weren't Serb Mafia.
Why do you suppose the Russians stopped you? Were they after Aida? Or you?
Why would they be after me?
Just exploring the options? Humor me.
They searched the van, so my guess is they were after her, or something they thought she had.
Not the medicines, obviously. In the idea, what else?
None.
Anything else they wanted from you?
They asked her about her uncle, Tariq Birkic.
What do you know about Birkic?
Only what Aida told me, that he was related by marriage. Her mother's cousin or something, and he's a mechanic that does work for her sometimes.
That's correct. I'm surprised she told you anything about him.
Why is that?
Birkic is a man we've had our eye on for some time. He's a Bosnian citizen now, but originally he was from Chechnya. Nobody knows much about him. He keeps a rather low profile. The rumor is that he came over in 1991 to fight in the Bosnian War, though that was never proven. That makes him a person of some interest to us.
And so is Aida, isn't she?
Why do you say that?
You wanted me to find her, and to let you know when I did.
How does that make her a person of interest?
You already know who she is, where she works, where she lives. You didn't need me to find her, did you? You needed me to get close to her.
Perhaps.
Who's the liar now?
Kolak laughed.
I said perhaps, didn't I?
Yes, you are correct.
You're a smart fellow, Jack. I did want you to get to know her. Because you haven't been able to get anyone else close to her. Which means you've tried to. Which means you're interested in her.
You should be an intelligence officer, Jack. You would make a good one.
Or perhaps you already are.
Me?
Hardly. Just a financial analyst. Kolak smiled.
Of course. With Hindley Associates. We checked you out, remember?
Anything else you need to know? I have a plane to catch.
Not until tomorrow morning, if I'm not mistaken. Whaling flight 1405 to Rome, 8:42 a.m.
What else do you want from me?
Just a few more questions. You said that Emir Jukic made the call to the Bosnian police.
Yes.
And you saw him make the call?
Jack shook his head.
No, as a matter of fact.
But Aida trusts him. And for what it's worth, we met up with him 30 minutes later. He didn't have any bloodstains on him or anything, if that's what you're getting at.
I wouldn't suggest Emir killed those men. But perhaps he didn't call the police as he said he did.
Or maybe he did. Maybe the police he called are the ones who killed those men.
We checked with the local cops. They never received such a phone call.
And you believe them?
Frankly, no. We accessed their phone records. No calls were made to the local station on the afternoon of that day.
So you think Emir called someone else, and that's who killed those men?
Kolak flashed another mouthful of crooked teeth. Who can say?
Jack checked his watch.
Big date tonight, Jack.
Something like that.
I hate to take up so much of your time, but just one or two more questions, if I may.
Shoot.
Tell me about your visit to the Peace and Friendship Center. What did you think about it?
I'm impressed that your government allowed it in the first place. With unemployment so high in your country, I wouldn't think you would want more immigrants.
We don't. But it looks good to the pencil pushers in Brussels, and my government very much wants to join the EU. By taking in refugees, it solves a problem for Brussels and makes us look more humanitarian for helping poor Muslims. You sound cynical. I'm a Catholic Croat. I'm sick and tired of always hearing about the suffering Muslims. I'm sure Ms. Kuric filled your head with her propaganda about their unique victim status in our country. She told me about the Croatian fascist Ustasha during the last war, if that's what you're referring to. Kolak nodded.
Yes, of course she would. They were terrible, brutal killers, for sure. But I wonder, as she was giving you her history lesson, did she tell you about World War II? About how Heinrich Himmler recruited not one, but two entire Nazi SS divisions, composed entirely of Bosniak Muslims? Judging by the look on your face, I imagine not. And if you want a real shock, Google the history of the German Nazis and the Muslim Brotherhood, the grandfather of all modern jihadis. Kolak leaned forward again. History isn't what we choose to forget, is it? If it weren't for the Catholic Poles saving Vienna from the Turks in 1683, we'd all be Muslims now, wouldn't we? Can I go? Yes, of course. But one last thing. I like you, Jack. I really do. And that's why I'm going to say to you that you are in the middle of things you can't possibly understand, including the three dead Russians. And yet, despite the risk to my personal safety, you were willing to use me to get close to Aida. A mistake on my part. I hope I have made it up to you by not telling the Russians that you and Aida were there. Why not? If I had, you and Aida would already be dead. Thanks, I guess. Take my advice. Be sure to be on that plane tomorrow. Better yet, change your ticket and leave tonight if you can. You saw all of the crowds and the traffic on the way over here. Those are thousands of Serbs swarming into the city for the Orthodox renewal service tomorrow. Sarajevo is a powder keg, and there are 50,000 matches already lit and ready to be thrown. And if I decide not to leave tomorrow... Have you heard the saying, God must love fools because he made so many of them? Jack stood. Goodbye, Agent Kolak. Kolak stood as well and shook Jack's hand. Goodbye, Jack. Please stay safe. And if I may, stay away from Aida Kuric. Chapter 55. Outside Sarajevo. Bosnia and Herzegovina. After processing the new batch of refugees, Aida swung by Jack's place and picked him up as promised. She drove him to her house out in the country, about 15 miles west of the city, not far off the R-442, another narrow, two-lane asphalt road. "How was your day?" Aida asked as she pulled away from the curb. "Went to the Srebrenica exhibit. Depressing as hell." He wasn't sure if he should tell her about the Kolak meeting yet. He was still processing it. Yours?
It went very well. Syrians are such nice people. One of them is a dentist. I think he might stay and help us in the clinic.
They rode along in silence for a while.
What's bothering you, Jack?
Nothing.
I'm not sure I believe you.
She rubbed his knee.
Tell me.
I had a meeting today with a guy named Kolak.
Dragan Kolak.
Yeah. You know him?
He's with Bosnian security. A Croat. A very bad man.
He certainly knows you.
What did he want?
Those Serbians that stopped us? He said they were actually Russians, and that they had been killed.
What?
I told him that we left them alive. And that Emir called the police after we left. He was suggesting that Emir either killed those men or contacted someone who did. Aida slapped the steering wheel, cursing in her native tongue.
That son of a bitch is a liar.
Those weren't Russians, Jack. Don't you think I would know the difference between Serbs and Russians?
Yeah, sure.
And why would he think that Emir wanted to kill them?
He didn't say. He was interested in Berkic, too. Said he was an ethnic Chechen.
He is. So what? He's a Bosnian citizen.
He knew that you were smuggling medicine from Dubrovnik.
Did he say how he knew that?
No.
Doesn't that tell you something?
No. What?
He knew about the medicine. He knew about the Serbs who were trying to rob us. He knew they were killed. But he blames Emir.
What are you saying?
Kolak is dirty. They're all dirty. And Kolak is out to get me because of the refugee center. You see, anything that helps Muslims is a threat to Serbs and Croats and thieves like him.
Jack tried to put the pieces together. They still didn't quite fit. There is another possibility. Aida was focused on the hairpin curve spooling up the mountain.
What possibility?
What if Kolak is right? What if Emir and Berkic are somehow connected?
They are connected. They're family by marriage. And sometimes Berkic does maintenance work on our vans and helps out with the tours. I told you that already.
That's my point. I think Emir might be using your company behind your back for his own purposes, or to help Berkic do whatever it is he's into.
That doesn't make any sense, Jack. If they did that, they would be working against me. Don't you think I'd know what was going on? Kolak is just using you to try and hurt me.
Think about it. Emir runs the company day in and day out. He and his drivers travel all over the Balkans and into Europe. It's a perfect setup to run drugs or guns or, heck, smuggle people if they wanted to.
No way. I'd know about it.
Jack laid a hand on her thigh. I'm worried about you. There's something going on, and it might wind up killing you. She stole a quick glance at him as she made another sharp turn.
Oh, Jack, what did I tell you? Bosnia is crazy, and it's hard for outsiders to understand it. Stay away from Kolak.
I still think you should come home to Virginia with me tomorrow until we sort it all out.
That's very sweet of you.
But my people have been dealing with thieves like Kolak for 500 years. We're survivors. I have friends back in Washington. They can do some research on this Kolak guy, and even Emir if you want.
You haven't talked to them yet about anything, have you?
No, not yet.
Good. Because there are things I would want you to check out for me first. But when you do, please be careful. I don't want you to hurt the center's reputation or mine. The work is too important.
I understand. I won't do anything to compromise you or the center.
Thank you.
But trust me, Aida. I'll get to the bottom of all of this, one way or another.
I know you will. And I'm grateful.
Aida turned off the asphalt and onto a hard-packed dirt road that led through a copse of trees, opening up to a clearing. She slowed to a stop in front of her place. She nodded at the house.
Let's forget about everything we talked about and just enjoy our last night together. Okay?
Okay. The main house was big by Bosnian standards, a two-story chalet style with steeply slanting roof lines, matching the pine-covered slopes it was planted against. Inside the chalet was as cozy as Jack expected, a real mountain retreat with heavy leather furniture, woolen rugs on the hardwood floors, and old wooden skis and snowshoes on the walls. She asked Jack to make them a fire while she cooked, handing him a glass of the Macallan single malt whiskey. 30 minutes later, they sat at a thick wooden dining table, eating pan-fried sausages, onions, and potatoes, flavored with a mix of spices that reminded Jack of the cevapi, only hotter. The ice-cold beer matched it perfectly.
I wish I wasn't leaving tomorrow. I hate it, too. Are you sure you have to?
Only if I want to keep my job. He took a swig of beer. I checked my flight schedule while you were cooking, and I reserved another ticket for you.
She took a drink of beer, smiling. That's very thoughtful of you. But it's too soon, I'm afraid. Another group of refugees is coming in 5 days, and another a week after that.
So you're open to the idea?
Open?
Yes.
Then come out in 3 weeks. You'll like Washington, and we'll figure this stuff out together. She popped the last bite of sausage into her mouth. The fat glistened on the curve of her lower lip.
I've always wanted to visit America.
She smiled as she chewed. Jack had a few pieces of sausage on his plate. Ida stabbed one of them and held it up in front of his mouth.
Hurry up and finish your dinner. You'll need your energy.
Jack bit the sausage off the fork. Energy for what? She touched his hand, flashing a come-hither smile. Jack didn't bother asking about dessert.
Brodorica, Croatia. Dom, Adara, and Midas stood with the operative from the Croatian Security and Intelligence Agency, SOA, a discreet distance away from the modest stone and red-tiled roof home overlooking the dazzling blue Adriatic Sea. It was currently occupied by an Irish family on vacation.
Zvezdev's remains were found here, the operative said, fermenting in a kimchi jar. But you already knew that.
And no evidence of any kind was found? Dom asked.
Nothing useful. The few fingerprints we found were Zvezdev's, and those were mostly smudged. Someone definitely cleaned the place, but we think he wasn't here for very long because he was on the run. I'm sorry you traveled all this way for nothing. Too bad you let your suspect in Slovenia get away.
She wasn't our suspect, Tom said, and she didn't get away. She was killed.
By this so-called Iron Syndicate you referred to, yes?
With your permission, we'd like to stay a few days, ask around town. Maybe we can turn up something.
I am instructed to extend to you every courtesy. However, I must be present at all times, especially in the event you question Croatian national citizens.
Adara frowned. That's not how we like to operate. Dom's phone rang. It was Jerry's ringtone. Hi, Jerry. What's shaking? Change of plan.
Chapter 56. Near Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. Jack woke from a troubled sleep a half hour before the alarm and stared at the ceiling.
What time is it?
Aida asked sleepily.
4:15. Go back to sleep.
What's wrong?
Still thinking about yesterday. Aida sat up, spilling out of her sheet. She brushed the chestnut hair out of her startling blue eyes and smiled.
Only the good stuff, I hope.
She touched him.
He was ready.
She climbed on top of him. He forgot his troubles. After they finished, she pulled on a plush robe and pattered into the kitchen to make a pot of strong Bosnian coffee and fry some ham while Jack checked his phone for messages. The one that caught his eye was from Jerry. Be at the airport at 8 a.m. sharp. No excuses. Jack wondered what that was all about. Just a reminder for him to get there on time for his flight? They ate, then showered. Drying off, Jack said, Can you drop me off at the airport at 8?
I'm sorry, I can't. I have a meeting scheduled at 8:15 with a UN delegate, but I have to stop by my office first. Emir can take you.
That's okay. I'll just grab a cab.
She crossed over to him and wrapped her arms around his neck and kissed him.
Emir is a good man, Jack. I trust him. You should too.
Yeah, sure. But he's also a busy man. A cab is easy.
And expensive.
But I'm a rich American, remember?
Hurry then. We need to go if you want to get packed.
Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina.
His orders came from the Czech directly just 5 days ago, confirming Jack Ryan's identity as well as his location in Sarajevo. The orders were explicit. Acquire the man's head, and do it without being detected. It was the most insane hit he'd ever been assigned, but the bonus offered was irresistible. Failure to fully comply with instructions would void the bonus. Worse, It meant he would be put on someone else's kill list.
It had been hell to actually locate Ryan because he was on the move, and harder still to track him, even when he was just in the city. He suspected Ryan was practicing SDRs, but if so, he did it so effortlessly that it was difficult to tell. There had been only two prior opportunities to grab Ryan, and both would have resulted in collateral damage. But the assassin was infamously patient, and his patience paid off. Today presented an ideal opportunity. Probably the last one, too. Ryan was his. All he had to do was wait.
Aida pulled up in front of Jack's apartment building 20 minutes later than they had planned. The traffic pouring into town was the worst she had ever seen. She didn't kill the engine.
Goodbyes are difficult, yes?
Yeah.
He had a hard time holding her gaze. You're not coming out in 3 weeks, are you?
I said I would try.
Then I'll come back. She touched his face with her hand.
That's not a good idea.
Why not?
I've been trying to tell you, but you won't listen. Things are more complicated here than you can possibly realize.
Then help me understand.
Okay. Here is the most important fact. By being with me, you are endangering my work, and even my life.
Jack's eyes widened.
How? You distract me, Jack. Others have noticed, including Kolak. The longer you are here, the harder they will work to use you and to hurt me and the work I am doing, which is my life. The people that hate us will do anything, including kidnapping you or worse. You saw what happened the other day. I care for you too much. I can't allow that to happen.
I can take care of myself. I'm sure you can. But I'm not willing to risk it. Or the work we're doing for the refugees. Do you understand?
No.
But I guess it doesn't matter. She leaned over and kissed him softly on the mouth.
Goodbye, my love.
Yeah.
Bye,
was all Jack could manage. He stood in the street and watched her pull away, knowing he would never see her again. It hurt like hell. Worse, he knew she was in trouble, and that he wouldn't be here to help her.
Jack jogged up the stairs, ignoring the stink of the garbage chute, and dashed into his apartment, running through a mental checklist of things to do before he left, starting with packing. The clock was ticking, but he wanted to clean the place up, too. Sweep, vacuum, put the dishes away, strip his sheets and toss them in the laundry. He didn't want to leave the apartment in worse shape than he'd found it in, partly because that was the way he was raised, and partly because he really liked the landlords. He also needed the distraction. Helpless despair was crouching at his door. Better to forget everything and get the hell out of Dodge. He headed for the bedroom to start packing. He flung the closet door open, glancing at the floor where his bag was stored. Instead, he saw a scuffed leather Oxford that wasn't his. The heel of a hand bludgeoned Jack between the eyes. The blow was blunted slightly when the man's arm crashed into the partly opened closet door, but it still hit home. Bright lights flashed in Jack's eyes just as the pain exploded in the front of his brain. He staggered backward a few steps as a dark-haired man in a janitor's uniform lunged out of the closet with an old-school leather garrote strung between his hands. As tall as Jack, but thinner, the charging man thrust both bald fists into Jack's chest, knocking him backward against the far wall, stunning him again and sending the hanging picture frames crashing to the floor in a shower of glass. Reeling from the blows, Jack struggled to focus on the wiry man, who suddenly grabbed Jack's shoulders and spun him around with a powerful twist. Before Jack could catch his footing, he felt the thick leather thong wrap around his neck. The sharp spike of an E against his spine corresponded to the vice grip of leather choking off his windpipe. Years of CQC training dulled the panic welling in Jack's gut. He was just moments away from blacking out and certain death,
but the limbic system dump of pure adrenaline cleared his brain. With his arms out of reach of his attacker's face, Jack's only recourse was to grab the leather thong and drop his body weight to the floor. The man's grip didn't falter, which Jack had counted on. The man stumbled forward as Jack's back hit the floor. But now the man's head was just above Jack's, the perfect place for Jack to thrust his knee into the top of the man's skull with a sickening thud. The man grunted, but his grip didn't loosen at the first blow. Jack kept pummeling his skull with a series of bicycle kicks, alternating his left and right knees, battering the man into semi-consciousness. His grip finally loosened enough that Jack could breathe a little. Jack grabbed the leather garrote and pulled the man down to the ground next to him, where he rained a series of well-aimed elbow strikes just behind the man's temple, cracking the tyrion, the weakest part of the human skull, where the frontal, parietal, temporal, and sphenoid bones all joined. The man lost consciousness entirely, finally releasing his iron grip. Jack unwrapped the garrote from his throat, struggling to breathe. He stared at the sudden swelling on the side of the man's head. The broken bones had ruptured the middle meningeal artery, exactly the outcome Clark's training had told him to expect. Jack was fighting for his life, and his training took over. He stumbled into the bathroom to splash cold water on his face. That's when he saw the ice chest sitting in the bathtub next to a stainless steel bone saw, a bottle of bleach, and a box of heavy-duty garbage bags. A cold chill ran down his sore spine, bad enough that someone had just tried to kill him. But the vision of his own head in that cooler made him shudder, and the idea that more than one killer, first the woman in Slovenia, now this guy, was trying to behead him and transport his skull to someone else, made him realize his life really was in danger. Who the fuck was this Iron Syndicate anyway? And what had he done to earn their hate? Jack splashed cold water on his face and checked his throat. Definitely red and a little swollen. If that guy had used piano wire, it probably would have cut his head off right then and there. To judge from the bone saw and heavy-duty garbage bags, the man was planning on doing his wet work inside the bathtub and cutting up Jack's body into pieces and hauling it away in the bags, then cleaning up the DNA evidence with bleach. Strange that he launched out of the closet the way he did, Jack thought. Normally you come after a guy from behind with a garrote. He must have surprised the shitbird when he opened the closet door. Now what? Well, he still had to pack. But what to do with the asshole in his bedroom? Jack stuck his head out of the front door to make sure no one was around, then hauled the wiry man by the shoulders onto the landing and heaved his slim frame head first into the garbage chute. The man's body clanged inside the fetid metal tube as it hurtled toward the dumpster 3 stories below. The man was still breathing, but in the reeking filth he was about to land in, that might not be to his advantage. Jack rushed back into the apartment, and having wiped the items clean of his fingerprints, went back into the hall and tossed the man's ice chest, bone saw, bleach bottle, and garbage bags in after him. He tossed the broken picture frames into a separate bag. The sound of their tumbling and crashing echoed in the tube. Jack shrugged. Given the beaten assassin he'd tossed into the dumpster, the busted closet door, and the broken picture frames, Jack figured his Airbnb guest rating would probably suffer a few hits. Time to go. Chapter 57. 10 miles southwest of the Olympic soccer stadium, Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. Tarik Brkić stroked his wide, bushy beard out of nervous habit as he approached the camouflaged launch area. He'd just received a phone call from the brother stationed at the Olympic soccer stadium. The roads this morning were still jammed with cars and buses streaming into Sarajevo. According to the brother, a former Bundeswehr scout, there were already 50,000 people in the stands. That was nearly double the number they had originally planned for. But according to the news reports, today's event would draw as many as 70,000 Orthodox, which the stadium in the past had accommodated for the visits of the Kafir popes John Paul II and Francis. 70,000. He scarcely could take it in. Such a gift from Allah. Was this